Hello, Stitchers. Welcome to Stitch Please, the official podcast of Black Women Stitch, the sewing group where Black Lives Matter. I'm your host, Lisa Woolfort. I'm a fourth-generation sewing enthusiast with more than 20 years of sewing experience. I am looking forward to today's conversation, so sit back, relax, and get ready to get your stitch together.
Hey, friends. Hey, it's Lisa from Black Women Stitch and the Stitch Please podcast. I am joining you once again from Charlottesville, Virginia, with, as we say, a very special episode, because this episode is with none other than Dr. Jennifer Hale. She is a quilter. She is a sewist in general, and she is an educator. And one of the many remarkable things that she does is bring all three of those gifts together. And she uses them to propel and advance a message about the power of sewing and creativity, about quilt making, and what it means to live in community. And that's one of the things I have really loved about the way that Dr. Hale combines quilting and education. So we are happy to welcome Dr. Hale. Welcome, Dr. Jennifer Hale. Yay!
Hello. How are you?
I am great. I am much better now that I am speaking with you. So thank you so much for being with us today. Give us an idea of your sewing story. What is the beginning of Dr. Jennifer Hale's sewing story?
Beginning of my story starts more with my grandmother. So my paternal grandmother, I'm a twin. So there were two of us. I was first. I'm the older sister.
You can absolutely tell. I mean, you didn't have to even tell me. I was going to say, I'm like, you are a doctor. That's what older kids, they do. That's what they do.
Yes, ma'am. So I'm the older sister. I call myself the older sister. I have a younger brother by 8 minutes. And so with my mother raised us by herself. And so that was a difficult chore to do as a single parent with two children at the same time. My paternal grandmother absolutely quit her job and said, I'm going to raise my grandchildren. We were the first two. So absolutely, she did that. She was a seamstress. And so she did the thing that a lot of females now protest. Like, I was very much a girly girl. So grandmom taught me how to sew. She taught me how to cook and she taught me how to clean while my brother and my grandfather sat and watched television.
And developed no practical skills of their own.
Absolutely not. But it was absolutely fabulous. I loved being with her. We were with her at a young age every day. It just made sense that we stayed with her. My mother would come and visit her own children, but you know, who's going to pack up twins every day? So we stayed with her. My mother would come, you know, take care of us. She would go home. She would go to work. So my mother was also an educator for about 34 years in high school. So I come from a long line of educators, also come from a line of seamstress as well. So my mother did do some sewing, and her mother as well. But the person who had the patience was my paternal grandmother.
And do you remember any of the early sewing projects that you all did? Do you have any early memories of, oh, I remember we made this thing together, or whenever I make this particular project, I think of her? What were some of the most, what did young Jennifer, pre-doctor Jennifer, like to sew when she was first getting started?
So kind of twofold. Back then, a billion years ago when I was in school, we had home ec. So I remember making an apron and a simple skirt, and my grandmother would help me to make those things. Probably around 8, 9-ish, she belonged to a community center that worked with sewing. And so I would come to her on Thursday nights. That was our day to go visit the grandparents. And once the kitchen was clean, everything was away, we would make our way over to the community center. And there we would create whatever. So if I wanted to learn how to make a dress, if we drafted it, if we used a pattern, we would make everything. And so I do remember this one blue dress that I made, and I probably have that picture somewhere, because not only did we So for the community center, they also had fashion shows at the community center. Ooh. And so I remember that dress. It was like a baby blue and white. And I'd created some sort of V hanging kerchief in the front of it. Ooh. That was probably a little janky at the time, but it was mine. And I stood there with a smile on my face. And that was what I had made. But more important was I always enjoyed spending time with my grandmother. Mm. And people always said, like, that was your best friend. And absolutely, that's what she was. And we just all throughout the years, we just practiced that craft more and more. She absolutely helped me. It wasn't until, and one really big story, my junior prom, my mom took me out shopping. And we looked everywhere for a dress and couldn't find one. And I came home and we were defeated, probably about 2 hours in the store, couldn't find anything. And my mother came home with a dress. And I will call it fugly.
Oh,
Yes. And I cried and I did not want to go on my prom. So my mother's mother saved me. She took me to the same exact store. And what did I find? A dress. And my mother said, I don't understand. And, I said, it was a choice. It was either wear that or find something else that worked. And so that dress worked. But it was a fight. I mean, it got ugly. So my father's mother, paternal grandmother, said for the senior prom, we're not doing this again. So we are going to make your senior prom dress. Oh. And so I do have the pictures of that, but we used organza. We added some white flowers for embellishment. Oh, wow. We made gauntlets. It was the first time I had heard of that. I had no idea what that was, but we absolutely rocked that dress because there was no way that we were going to go through the drama for the junior prom.
Yes, the junior prom experience taught you that you were not built for ready to wear. You know what? Like I would much rather have boutique couture things made just for me that I might make myself. I really appreciate the community as well as the familial affection that seems to be part of your early sewing story. Can you tell us a little bit more about the community center, the idea that, okay, after you got things cleaned up and the homework done, you and your grandma could go to the community center and there would be somebody, you could learn to sew something, you could practice a zipper, you could help baste a quilt. How did that come about? It seems like a really wonderful thing that I'm sure a lot of people would be like, how can I have that now?
Other than being the community center and that being a place where, and it was really the neighborhood. So back then, 40 years ago, and back then there were a lot of people who would sew. So them coming to learn how to sew or to share their experiences. So there was actually a lady there who helped me to make the senior prom dress as well, who was a seamstress and a wedding gown maker. And yes. So that's what she did and what she specialized in. Miss Jerry or was Miss Jessie, it was one of the two. And she absolutely, worked with everyone. She taught everyone how to do something. And it was just a great place. Like it was somewhere that you wanted to go. You look forward to being there.
Yes.
You look forward to participating. I learned very early on that if I couldn't afford it, then it was easier to make it. And so again, telling my age in the 80s, jeans, designer jeans came onto the scene.
Yes.
And that was something that with having two children and just the one income, my mother couldn't afford for us. And so we learned how to make something that looked like the jeans.
Yes.
At that time. And we could embellish it and add the little designs and do the thing to make it seem like, it fit in with everything else. Yet it was original. It wasn't Sassoon or...
Right.
Billy D jeans back then or Jordache.
That's right.
But, it was something that made you feel like you fit in with everybody else, even though you didn't have those major designer brands. But it was, like I said, it was absolutely a great place to be because you learned from other people. And I think that's why I appreciate when I went on to be a part of a quilting class or making connections with TikTok, that ability to establish a community with people who choose to share their gift rather than to gatekeep.
Yes. And that's one of the things I was picking up on in your sewing story, that you learned in community, you stitched in family. It was a way to extend or supplement income by saying, hey, we don't need to buy these things. We can't afford them anyway, but we get to have them nonetheless. Right. And there's something about being able to equip and empower oneself through the needle and the thread that I think is one of the keys to one of the many liberatory aspects, I think, of sewing. Now, I'm really interested to know how you transitioned or what the process was, if there was one at all, from sewing into quilting. I think it's because I know you more as a quilter. And it wasn't until looking through the photos that you sent for the episode, I was like, oh, wait, look, that's a fan and a dress. And look, I'll show y'all. She got them over there. So that was something I was really like curious about. Like, tell me a bit about how the sewing and quilting balance or complement each other.
So I want to say that quilting came about when I needed to take a break. For years, so I made my own clothes, which wasn't a problem. Then I got a job and I was able to afford some clothes.
Yes.
So that makes a difference. But in addition to that, the big thing is I used to do prom dresses, bridesmaids dresses. I've made one wedding dress. So my mother's mother was big with our history, African American history. So she was pivotal for me with that piece of my life and making sure that I was grounded there. So my cousin had an African American, no, I'm thinking back to the traditional African wedding-ish. So in January, this idea of hers came out, this epiphany that she was going to have this wedding. It was going to be in May. And she found somebody who already had the garments made, but there were wraparound skirts at the time and gay lace for the heads.
Okay.
He was an older woman at the time, maybe in her 40s. And she said, no, they're not going to be able to wrap anything around and keep it on. And those gay lays are going to come off. So what I need you to do, Jennifer, is turn all those skirts into A-line skirts. I need you to create crowns for the ladies. And I need hats and matching sets for the men to match them.
Wow.
So that was my job. Adding on, now mind you, this is January to May. Then you added on, I need my aunt needs an outfit. So I need you to make that. Adding on to that, I need table runners, I need pillows, I need something for the cousin that's going to walk me down the aisle. You are going to be a flower girl at 20 some years old because I will not have any children in my wedding. So all these things began to pile up on my plate. So I was working on those. I'm getting those done. And this is in between working, of course, a full-time job. By March about 25th or 26th, she calls me. Back then, we didn't have cell phones. And I let the answer machine pick up as I'll be late for work if I call and listen to you. I went on to work, but the whole way I'm like, what could she want?
And there was no way to tell because you couldn't just check the voicemail on your phone. You had to go press the cassette tape box or whatever on the answer machine.
Right. So at least remotely could get it from work. So when I got to work, I listened to it. And the one thing that was, because there was nothing left. They were like, what else could she want? And she says, my seamstress OD'd, and I need you to make my wedding dress. Now, this is March 25th, 26th. Wedding is like May 3rd.
Oh my gosh.
So
that's like basically a month.
Yes, ma'am.
Basically.
Yes, ma'am. And she said, I bought 3 yards of fabric. There's at that time, $35 a yard. It was a pretty off-white brocade fabric with gold threading. And she said, and it was the last 3 yards. Talk about pressure. So I've never.
This person doesn't happen to be a 12-inch doll, do they?
Girl, we made that work. That 3 yards work.
Oh my
but,
gosh.
You know, you're not talking a traditional flowy gown. This mimicked the dresses of the traditional African garb. So it worked. But she had a sketch of a picture that somebody had drawn.
Oh gosh.
Nothing was cut out. And it was like, now you've got to create this. So that pulled me beyond because I am very much a pattern person. Mm. And I think from there, I don't self-draft and then create. Mm. So I had to figure this out with a month to go working a full-time job.
Oof.
Now I could have added that to the pile of list of things, but I'd have to find it. But I did. We knocked it out. We got it done. She looked absolutely fabulous. And I basically said after that, like, yeah, I'm not going to do a whole lot of sewing from then. So between working, the sewing machine went down, and maybe I whipped together a skirt here and there or a pull here and there.
Right.
For the most part, I didn't do much. So then fast forwarding about maybe 16, 20 years ago, I don't know how it connected. Hmm. I saw something that dealt with quilting and I said, oh, well, let me try that.
Hey friends, hey, I know you're enjoying the audio version of Stitch Please, and thanks so much for listening. But you're missing out on all the great stuff going on behind the scenes. That's why I'm inviting you to join our Black Women Stitch Patreon. For as little as $5 a month, you can see all the video versions of the podcast. Plus, you get some amazing swatch cards. You know how much I love these swatch cards. Look, look, see how cool these are? You can't see them because you are not yet on the Patreon. So when you join the Patreon, you'll be able to see this, me showing you these amazing cards. We also have some great perks at the other tiers, like discounts, swag, office hours, and more. Don't be the last sewist in the group now. Head over to patreon.com/blackwomenstitch or click the link in the show notes and become a Patreon supporter today. We truly cannot do this without you. So thank you so much.
And so I tried it. It looked like I tried it with no, you know, because if you can sew, you can quilt. Like, that's what I thought.
That is what you thought.
There are rules.
And there are lots of rules.
No. And then you don't get the one that just has the squares or the strips and say, let me do that. No. You look at the most intricate thing that you can find and you go, this is it.
And that's the one I need. This is the one that speaks to me.
Yes. And then it spoke to me, and that's all it did was speak, because what it finally looked like, we're not going to discuss. But it was a learning process, and it said, I need more practice. So then I looked up local quilt shops, and I traveled there and took classes with them.
Yes.
They're expensive. To take a class, it makes sense because, you know, a person is worthy of their hire. But, you know, I was able to purchase patterns, sit in their classes. You take the sewing machine, all your tools with you, and you learn how to do the thing and do the thing right.
And so we're looking here at a winter themed Christmas runner that's blue and light blue and white and gray. Is this one of the things you learned at the class?
That is similar to something I learned. That picture is actually the 12 Days of Blackness that we did with the Black Sewing Network. So that is the table runner that I created for that sew along. Like, what can I do in an hour? This is what we can make.
Yes.
So it's a spin off of what you will see online. Is either they will call it a 10-minute or a 20-minute table runner, depending on who saying what it is, but it doesn't take long to make once you've cut out everything. It just requires two pieces of fabric. Instead of doing it with two pieces, I then just stitched charm squares, which are 5-inch squares, together to give it that patchwork look, to make it look a little bit more fancy than being online for 10 minutes to show somebody how to make a real quick and easy table wagon.
Oh, that is so great. I'd love to hear the story of, well, all of these are lovely, but this is unbelievable.
So there's a ruler with that, because one thing that we, you know, that we learn as quilters is that you will have a million rulers.
A million, a million. And so just to describe this piece, it looks like some tessellating stars, and it's this really beautiful multi, I'm going to just try to describe it, but I'd ask for your description as well, because for folks who aren't on the Patreon, why aren't you on the Patreon? Because then you get to see the pictures. But this is this lovely wall hanging, and the colors look very much like, they remind me of fall, but they also have some bright, cheerful ones in there. It looks like every third section is punctuated by these gorgeous, gorgeous stars that are made from pieced diamonds. There is an inner black border that separates the patchwork outer border from the main quilt. And I can even see the quilting from here that looks so wonderful. So that's just my outside first, like, wow, this is amazing kind of look. But Jennifer, please tell us the story about this. And when, what do you see when you look at this? What is the piece called?
So other than it just being, and I believe it was called a Hunter Star. Like for me, I'm a color person. Mm. So most of the things that you will see me quilt, especially for self, will have a lot of bright colors. That's what I was known for in my quilting class.
Okay.
The bright colors. This is actually part of a ruler set that we have.
Okay.
And so you use the ruler to create those perfect stars. So it's with strip quilting, so it works very easily and it looks more difficult than what it actually is. This is also boutique fabric, so that's why the colors are much more vibrant than if you were using regular cotton.
So it's a batik. These are batiks, yes. And that's why the color is so intense, because it's a batik. Yes. And the ruler, well, how would you describe it? Is it a diamond shaped ruler? Is it a ruler that comes with a particular book? I mean, when you say this is easier than it looks, I'm like, I can't imagine. I can't imagine anything about this being easy.
So it's all in the ruler. So the ruler, it's square, if you will, but it has a pattern on it, guidelines that allow you to follow those guidelines as you're creating the quilt. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it makes it a little bit easier. So that's why, like, quilters have a billion rulers or templates, if you will, that makes your job easier than creating it. So instead of cutting on diagonals and doing Y seams and other things like
it's
here, you can do this straight stitch, but the way that you're going to cut it is going to give you this angle that makes it look like you did a whole lot more work than you actually did. So it's work, but it's not difficult work to do it. Hmm. And when it's scrappy, it's even easier because scrappy is forgiving.
Yes.
There's no real set pattern to it other than making sure that two colors don't touch.
Right, right.
That's it. But beyond that, it could just be colors and patterns and shapes can be all over the place. And it just looks right because it can't look wrong. When you're working with something like when we did the Disappearing Nine patch, it's very obvious when two colors butt right up against each other or the pattern doesn't go in the right direction because you're only using a selected amount of fabrics. Mm. And so it gives you a different look. And to most people who don't know anything about quilting, you may look at a mistake and just think, well, that's the quilt. But to a quilter, you know, we pick it up and we put it on Facebook or somewhere else and we go, you know, I made a mistake.
Start
and
the public like, shunning.
Good. That looks good. And I'm like, and then the quilters are like, yeah, girl, that's all right where you made it.
Yeah. Start the public shunning. It can be really intense. And I think that that is one of the things that I find interesting about all the different types of quilting that there are. There's so many different varieties. Some are much better with improvisation than others. Some are very traditional and those traditions have to be adhered to. Otherwise, why are they traditions? But then nothing ever changes and it looks, you know, to me personally, a little flat. And so it's interesting to find, to understand how you have managed to bring in so many different fresh perspectives using tools or blocks that are pretty traditional. And I was thinking in particular, one of the quilts I wanted to ask you about was this one. It's the one that has the African ladies or women, like a kind of dark silhouettes of women wearing galas and, you know, and big dresses, or I'm not sure how you would describe the dress in particular, but it's all made out of triangles. Like squares and half square triangles. It's really, really cool. Tell me about why these types of quilt projects are something that you gravitate toward.
So first of all, I'm big with Ankara. Mm. And so quilts like this one allow you to use scraps.
Yes.
So you've made a dress or whatever other outfit you have, and then you have these scraps. Typical sewers throw scraps away.
I do not. I put them in the box. I have a whole episode about that. Y'all don't throw them away. Put them in a box and save them. My 2023 scraps are now in a cushion. So don't throw them out. But proceed. You're right. Well, you said typical girl. Like I'm sitting here like I'm typical.
Huh? Yeah, you're not typical.
I am not typical.
You're in room in your organization and those are like goals. But yeah, they tend to like until they pile up and then they give them away.
Yes, you know? That's right. So that's
like,
right.
When Grace, she has all of hers for, you know, African Zesty Couture.
Yes.
She bags everything up and then it makes sense. She sells them.
Yes.
Somebody who can use the scraps can, so she doesn't throw them away, but she herself doesn't have a purpose necessarily
right.
for them. So that's she right. repurposes them.
Yes.
But for quilting, so it's great because you can make the garment and then take the fabric and move it over into the quilting world
yes.
and then create again something that is very scrappy like this. And so this was like perfect for me. When I first started with the quilting circle and eventually the quilting academy, and that was about maybe in 2008, 2009, somewhere right around there, it was a very white organization. People, not a problem for me, you know, but it's very white. And so everything that we made was very white. If we did anything that was applique, the skin tone was going to be very white. And so as a person of color, I'm absolutely going to represent people of color. So it gave me the opportunity to look at quilts and say, now, how can I, number one, bring this to the table, but also, you know, make sure that this is out there. You know, it's not bad, but it's something real. Everybody don't look like this, you know.
Right.
And so being a part of a Facebook group, somebody had posted a quilt similar to the one that you're looking at. And I was like, I'm going to recreate that. And so I went to the quilting circle. And so the person who was leading the group, I said, look, this is what I want to do. I need you to help me to figure out how to make these blocks. And so we sat and we studied it. We looked at it and we figured out how to recreate those blocks.
Oh.
And once I recreated them, you couldn't stop me. So there are about 5 of them, I believe, that I created. I've gifted one to a cousin. One hanging at work. This is a smaller one.
Yes.
There's another one that looks similar to that one. And then I have a big one that needs to be quilted. So that's, you know, in the making. But I absolutely, everyone adores those. They love them.
Yes.
The Quilt Academy had at a local visitor center in Bensalem, we actually had quilt shows. And it was, of course, my mission to make sure that every year there was something for a person of color
yes.
that was up there. So that was one that was represented. There were some others that were represented as well. If Santa Claus was in there, my Santa Claus is black.
Yes, right. You know, that's right.
You know, my mama was Santa Claus and she wasn't white with a white beard.
Exactly.
So, I made sure and it was like, it was normal because this was the person who I was
yes.
and therefore like they, you know, like I said, it wasn't a thing there. It wasn't, why are you doing, you know, it was like, okay, like they knew that's what Jennifer's going to do. And that's what Jennifer did. But I really brought the Ankara. They loved, you know, seeing the Ankara or the African prints. You know, it brought awareness, you know, to the organization for them to see that. Actually, they did. We have a book, it's around here somewhere, the Underground Railroad book by Eleanor Burns.
Ah, yes.
So they did do that as a quilt along at the Sewing Academy as well. So, you know, they were an open group of people, but like I said, it's, you know, it's never personal. It's what you're exposed to.
Right.
And, you know, that in Bensalem in Philly area, outside Philly, it's mostly white. So you're going to get what you get in that particular area. But absolutely, you know, it's always my job to make sure not to be the spokesperson for, but to make sure that I am represented in whatever forum I'm in.
Absolutely. You can absolutely see that. Can you tell us a bit about the Quilting Academy? You've mentioned Quilting Academy. I would love to know, what is Quilting Academy? Is it a physical location? Is it a digital hub? What is Quilting Academy and how did you get involved with them?
So one of the local quilt shops, because you go online and you look up quilt shops and they're not as close to home as we would like them to be. So you end up traveling to different places to get to them, sometimes an hour away from the house. So I first found what was called the Quilting Circle, which was a store, and they had quilting classes within the circle. The owner decided to retire, and so she sold her business. And the ladies, a group of three ladies, decided that they didn't want to stop. And so instead of opening a quilting shop, they would open up a quilting academy.
Okay.
There they could teach quilting classes, but also what I chose to do was to be a part of Open Sew Nights. And that way you would bring your project to the table and you will work on your project. Now you might get inspired by something that somebody else was doing and then buy your pattern to make that the next time. But it gave us the opportunity to not only sew, but also to share. So for the next 8 years that I was with these ladies, we watched the grandchildren grow up. We watch people get married. Unfortunately, family members pass. You know, we celebrated. We went out.
All these different milestones. You know what this reminds me of, Jennifer? It reminds me of something you already told me. And that was when you, before you became Dr. Jennifer Hale, little Jennifer would go up to the community center with her grandma after the chores were done and could have a great time learning and just being in camaraderie and kind of creative community up at the community center. And now here you are as an adult finding another type of creative community center and being in transition with that place as it goes from being the sewing circle to the sewing academy. And it's just bringing, I don't know, there's something about the way that you attract or create or maybe require community as part of your creative expression. Can you tell us about why your creativity is somehow enhanced by community?